It's the E-commerce Master Plan Podcast, here to help you grow your e-commerce business faster and more efficiently by cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and guidance from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello, Master Plan world. Welcome to our latest podcast episode. It is awesome, as it always is, to have you out there listening. I'm Chloe Thomas, the creator of the E-commerce Master Plan. I'm an author, speaker and consultant, and I focus on e-commerce business strategy and marketing. Now, last time we explored how Jan Root follows the trends with his Morale Patches, a very fast-to-market product where it's essential to control your own production. And also where a strong brand identity has been vital to growth. So if you want to know more about any of that, then take a listen to that one. Or join the chat in our Facebook group at ecommercemasterplan.com/Facebook with your thoughts. But don't do that yet, because you want to listen to this episode first. And this time we're looking into a very different type of e-commerce. Now, regular listeners will know I like to bring you an alternative type of e-commerce every now and then. We've explored SaaS, we've done marketplaces, we've done travel, and this episode we're going to dive into the world of selling software online. Now, I'm going to introduce you to our special guest very shortly. He is Mark Morris, the Managing Director of Introversion Software, a highly respected independent games developer and publisher. Since launching in 2001, they've brought 5 critically acclaimed video games to market, including the BAFTA, yes, BAFTA, American listeners, that's the equivalent of the Oscars, award-winning Prison Architect, which has sold over 2 million copies to date. Hi, Mark.
Hello, Chloe.
How are you doing?
I'm doing very well indeed. Very well indeed. Thank you for asking.
Excellent. I've just given our listeners a super quick overview of you and your business and where you are at the moment. But how did you get started off in e-commerce?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, because I think we're probably going to be one of the earliest people to have gotten into e-commerce. When I was at university back in 2001, there was a new business competition where basically if you wrote a business plan, you could win £10,000. Now, I had absolutely no interest in starting a business, but I did have an interest in trying to win £10,000. Well, not quite £10,000. Now, one of my friends that I live with in halls had spent 4 years, well, not 4 years, 2 years, writing a video game. So he had a game, and another friend of mine wanted to be an entrepreneur and had studied all of the business modules, and he was an electrical engineer, but he'd done those kind of things, you know, accounting and all the rest of it. And I said, fellas, let's write a business plan, taking this game Uplink, bringing it to the market, we'll submit that to the competition and we'll win, you know, £10,000, £3,000 a third each. And, you know, we can have a beer, pay off this part of the student loan and go our separate ways. Righto, Mark, they say that sounds like a brilliant idea. So where we are in 2001 time-wise was pretty early on in the internet. And it was, there were e-commerce solutions. We used one called Worldpay, which still exists. You probably know them well. And they, I think they must have been the first, or, you know, it was not a regular thing that people were buying things off the internet in those days. Amazon was around, because I can remember buying books from Amazon, but
I think you could only buy books on Amazon.
Yeah, that's right.
Google had only been around for like 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, probably, or even, like they hadn't been known, because I can remember when I was at uni searching via Yahoo and Excite and all these other things, you know, and then, you know, having to search through multiple search engines. And so Uplink was a game all about computer hacking. So we were confident that the audience for Uplink would be au fait with buying things on the internet, you know, whereas your mum in those days would never dream of buying anything on the internet. You know, there was no online shopping. There was none of that. You know, it was kind of like the dark net is now, I guess, a sort of little niche thing. And so our business plan was to burn CDs of our game, print out the labels for the CDs and the jackets for the jewel cake, you know, on a little bubble jet printer, take orders via Worldpay and stick these in boxes or envelopes and send them out to people around the world. Our marketing strategy was about 3 posts in a couple of online sort of hacking forums and Linux forums about the game. And we sent the game off in a brown manila envelope, or brown envelope, to PC Gamer, Linux Format, and a couple of other magazines.
And some pretty basic marketing then.
Oh, it couldn't have
but
been
very anymore. Targeted.
I mean, now that, you know, now people talk about guerrilla marketing, you know, that was guerrilla. We didn't even know we were being guerrillas, you know. And so we did this, and we were getting a few orders. You know, we were getting about sort of 20 a day, 30 a day.
So you actually launched it. It wasn't just the business plan.
No,
it was
fully
concepted.
Well, we wrote the business plan, and they looked at us and just laughed, right? And we're like, clear off, we're looking for Dyson. So we were like, oh, all right then. But we've got this business plan that only required us to invest about £200 each. You know, we needed about £600 to set up the website and wire in WorldPay and, you know, and buy some blank CDs, you know. And then just, you know, the revenue that we'd be getting from selling the games online would turn, you know, enable us to produce more, basically. And so that's exactly what we did. And we hit our production limit very quickly. You know, I thought that we'd probably be able to do 100 a day, you know, but it turns out bubble jet printers can do about 20 a day. And because we just kept running out of ink and all sorts of things. And so we were sort of, it was really just a bit of a hobby, really, see if we can make some money. And I remember coming back, went on a skiing trip with Tom, the business guy, and came back from him, and the Linux Format, I think it was Linux Format, their review was out. So I went straight into WH Smith or whoever it was at Gatwick, picked up this magazine, quickly went through to it and found the game review. And we'd got, I think it was 60%, something like that.
Ooh.
And I just thought, that's it, done. That's the end of us. You know, we needed to get high 80s for us to have any chance, because we're completely obscure. Nobody knows who we are. Linux Format is our absolute target market. You know, the people that buy a game devoted to an operating system are the ones who are going to buy Linux. And if they're not set on fire by this game, we're done.
Yeah.
So sort of given up, really. And a couple of days later, PC Gamer wrote their review on it. Now, we've got quarter of a page in PC, or half of a page, so a quarter of a 2-page spread in PC Gamer. And they gave us 85% for Uplink. And suddenly, PC Gamer were probably the only publication in the world who were big enough to give us the confidence following on from that Linux format.
Yeah. Thing. They had the much bigger distribution, didn't they?
Exactly. Well, and it was going out to gamers, you know? Mm. And so it's like, okay, so we didn't quite get the Linux guys, the sysadmins, but we have got the gamers, you know, they loved it. And that was it, you know, orders started spiking. We got enough to do a professional production run, so we didn't need to run around the place with blue ink all over our fingers the whole time. Everything was blue. And nowadays, people come up to us at the show and things with these original jewel case copies of Uplink, and you know, we tagged all of them. There's our initials, so you can tell which director produced these.
Really?
Yeah. If you know where to look, and I didn't produce many of them, and the other guys did. So mine are sort of the rarest copies of Uplink out there. So that was it. So that was how we got started in the world of e-commerce, really.
And I'm guessing from some of the names you said there that it's the same, the three of you who then went on to found Introversion.
Well, that was Introversion, yes, exactly. Yeah. In those days as a partnership.
So and then, so whereas many, you know, kind of the back then the traditional games model market was boxes in WH Smith's, pretty much, wasn't it?
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
So for you guys, when you actually went fully into business, I'm guessing the e-commerce side of things was a bit of a no-brainer.
Well, absolutely. It was that it wasn't even that bad. There wasn't any digital distribution either. So we couldn't, you know, nowadays people think, why are you printing CDs? Well, it just wasn't the done thing. There was no technology platform in place to enable you to download the game, and we were terrified as well about piracy, because Uplink was a very small game, so we padded the game out with loads of guitar sounds and things. Not that you would know what the file was, but we just made it so big that it would take over an hour or something to upload on a 56k modem, which we thought that was our counter piracy strategy back in those days. But yeah, so off the back of, so we were always doing those, shipping those boxes, and we're shipping those worldwide, and you know, I'm getting a real flood of nostalgia because I can remember printing out the labels to everywhere in the world, you know, and it's an amazing feeling. You're shipping these games off to Newfoundland and Australia and, you know, all these, you're realizing you're reaching every corner of the world. But soon afterwards, the next step for us was to try and get in the shop. So we found a distributor. We got it into HMV, but that was it. Game wouldn't take us. None of the other shops would take it. We didn't really know what we were doing with retail in those days. And to be honest, I'm not allowed to swear, so I can't really talk about what I think of retailers as a business model and how they operate. So we've done a bit of retail stuff, but our business really has been online. You know, it's been e-commerce from the start. Without e-commerce, there wouldn't be an Introversion.
So let's kind of fill in the blanks about where the business is right now. So you're, via your accent, I'm guessing our listeners have already guessed you're in the UK. You're in London, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So we don't have an office. We tried one for a few years, but it just didn't really work for us. And we sort of gravitated away from London slightly. We all went to university in South Kensington, but now I live in sort of southeast London. The other three directors live, well, one of them's in Cambridge, just sort of spread around. And we come together about once a month to for the board meeting to sort of look at the strategy and review where we are. And then the rest of what we do in terms of game development and the publishing function is just all done online now with Google Docs and Skype and all of these other services.
Cool. And you're selling globally still, I'm guessing?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the big change, which will be interesting potentially from an e-commerce point of view, is there's a platform called Steam. And you can think of Steam as Microsoft or Sony for PC and Mac gaming. They basically sell 99% probably of games in the world, of PC games. Wow. So what we do is we distribute through them and they sell into, I don't know how many countries they're into now, like 100 countries or whatever it is, expanding all the time. And then we also maintain our own route to market directly through our website. And that's it's global as well. So we shut down our physical distribution side of the business, which sounds very grandiose, but it ended up being my dad just stamp licking every day. We shut that down in January of this year.
You've literally gone full digital in the last few months.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because we just, no one's buying them now. There's a few sort of super hardcore fans that will that will want a kind of special edition of a game, but by far the majority of people just want it online now. And the logistics of servicing physical boxes is quite expensive, you know, and time consuming, and also just wasteful. It's very difficult to predict how many units you need to buy and all of those other things. So for us, we just looked at the numbers and thought, you know what, it's we're probably down to shipping out one or two units a week, something like that. So it's at the point where you just go, we can't continue to commit to this. So
But there might be like a special edition with a special box.
Yeah, exactly.
Limited in a couple of months' time or something.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So we did that with Prison Architect. Rather than the idea being is that you always got the option of buying a box as a bit of an incentive. And production costs have come way down now. I mean, back when we started off, we had to do 3,000 of uplink. That was the minimum order size that anybody would do. And I think, I can't remember what they were charging per disc, but it might have been £2 or £3, something like that, for such a low order. Whereas now you can get small run production runs done at whatever, 50p a disc, you know. So it's the economies of scale have faded away to the point that you can do small low level production runs and ship them out as a kind of one off. But whether we'll do that again, I don't know. It's still a lot of effort.
Yeah, it's a lot of design, a lot of production, a lot of organisation. So whilst we're on pricing, or kind of cost, I suppose, what's the average selling price for one of your games?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, average is I'm not going to give you the average because it wouldn't make sense. But the Prison Architect, which is our biggest selling game and our latest game, 5 years old, that's $30. America makes up most of the audience, which is why I talk in dollars, but obviously it's all localized into whatever that is, £20 or something. and the other games in the back catalogue are $10 each prior to Prison Architect. The last game we did was Multivinia, which I think was 2010, so it's kind of 7 years old now. Now, the games still sell. You know, it's the principle of the long tail absolutely holds in our industry. It's not the case that because a game is old, people don't want to play it anymore. They absolutely do. But you can't command sort of premium prices for them. So we charge $10 for each of those back catalogue games, and then we've got a complete pack a complete pack of those four for 20. So the idea is you give us another 10 and you'll get three more games, so it's better value for money.
And then
there's a bundle including Prison Architect, but you know, I can't for the life of me remember how much we charge for that.
But what we're saying here is we're not talking about Candy Crush. This is not an app based mobile thing. This is those proper PC games that are highly addictive, that PC, Xbox, etc., that we're all quite familiar with seeing as we go into game or into HMV or into any other space.
Exactly that. And Prison Architect, we started off on PC, but now it is available on Xbox One and PS4. And if you go into game, you'll see Prison Architect if game have put it on the shelves.
Okay, and I just wanted to go back to those platforms you're selling on. So you mentioned Steam, which is...
Steam.
I've written Steam as well, and I just decided to read it out wrong.
Call it Stream, yeah.
So Steam, which is, I'm guessing, kind of like a marketplace, like an Amazon or an eBay, but specifically for games, would that be right?
Not eBay, more Amazon, but more like, think about the App Store. That's what's going to make you understand.
Okay, got you.
Right?
Okay.
So Apple own the App Store, right? And if you want to ship something on iPad, then you put it on the App Store. Apple merchandise some of their product or some of the product on there, and then you download it. Apple handle all of the transactions, and then they pay the developer or the publisher on the back end off of that. So it's that model, but for big PC gaming.
Nice. And then you have your own platform that you sell direct on. And is that something you've built yourself, or is that
something absolutely.
You've...
Well, going back, we had a bit of a legacy issue. So when we started off, we were just using Worldpay. Then we migrated. This is an e-commerce audience, so they might be interested. No one else is. But we migrated to something called OzCommerce, which is an open source store. So we used OzCommerce for... A good while, but I got increasingly concerned about OzCommerce. Not that I want to be deflammatory, but just we had done a lot of customization. This is the best way of explaining it. And I was no longer confident that the customization that we had put into OzCommerce was leaving that platform intact. So it was very difficult. You know, it didn't really support analytics properly, so we couldn't track any customer flows through it. I was never particularly confident that it was even completing every transaction that got started. So and we wanted to move away from, even though the directors are three out of the four of us are computer scientists, I don't want to spend my time coding and managing the website. So I was looking for a very, very lightweight solution where basically somebody else would provide all of the cart management, payment systems, all the rest of it.
And let's just point out that in your industry, that cart payment system is even more complex than it is in normal e-commerce, because it's actually responsible for delivering electronically the product right there.
That's
and then.
Right. That's the other thing, you know, that we needed to do delivery on the back end of that. So, you know, delivering the files. And it took me a while to find Sendal. It wasn't called Sendal in those days. So I might call it Digital Delivery App, or DDA if we talk about it, but it's called Sendal now.
And basically, as in send...
owl,
bird.
like the hooting, hooting owl, and basically that it. Most of the other solutions that I found were sort of shops, you know, full shop fronts with merchandising, and you know, Shopify. You can customize your shop however you like, but I didn't want a shop. You know, I wanted one click buy option, and that's what Sendal provides. You know, working on mobile and all the rest of it, and it was just brilliant. It was just exactly the solution that we required. Quite a small firm, but pretty responsive to our needs. And they've added a lot of functionality in as we've gone along. So I don't need to worry now about, you know, PayPal or Stripe or pouring email addresses into an email system. We use MailChimp, and MailChimp connects directly with Sendal. You know, they do all this stuff. They do watermarking on the back end. I mean, loads and loads of stuff. Yeah. But if you're interested in selling, well, software, and we sell video games, but any kind of software really, then Sendal is a really good platform for that.
I have to say I'm a massive fan of going and finding a platform that does what you want it to do and not trying to reinvent the wheel. And it sounds like you've found your existing wheel, I suppose.
I mean, we partly the problem with introversion is the wheels are always the wrong shape for us, you know, like nothing ever quite does what we want it to do perfectly. And I think a big part of our success actually has been not accepting that. You know, if we want to do something from a business perspective, then making the technology work to deliver exactly what it is that we want that technology to provide. Now, over time, we have found that we've made mistakes in that we've added in some functionality that ultimately wasn't really necessary. So we've kind of learned. But I still look for solutions that are either very lightweight in terms of they just do one thing, but they do that one thing incredibly well, mm-hmm. or solutions where we can tinker with it if we need to. Because yeah. I think for our business, actually reinventing the wheel is what has kept us being successful.
And probably inevitable when you've got three computer scientists on board.
Maybe.
So, Mark, we've done a lot of kind of box-ticking the basics of the business model there, you know, just to really help everybody get up to speed. But what would you say right now is the most awesome thing about introversion software?
Well, that's such a hard question. I think right now we're working on our next game that's going to come out at some point in the near future, and we're wrestling with that at the moment, exactly when to release it. And to me, whenever we release a game, there is an audience. Steam have an audience of about 100 million. So there's a potential audience of 100 million gamers out there. And when we release a game, we have the potential to sell to every one of those. You know, now that's not going to happen. Of course, it's not going to happen. We're not going to be Minecraft. Well, but
probably not in week one, but maybe by year three.
I doubt it. I mean, Prison Architect is probably a good market cap for us, but 2 million units is just incredible. And so the most amazing thing, the most exciting thing, is we're right on the cusp of releasing a new game that might bring entertainment to millions of people, and I find that amazing. You know, the world at the moment is a world without Scanner Somba. That's our next game, and in the not too distant future, it will be out there, and it will either fizzle away into nothing, because that happens sometimes, or I don't want to sound arrogant, but every one of our games, we take a lot of pride and care over our games, and every one that we've made is slightly different. And I have people that come up to me at conferences talking about each of the games we've made and telling me that's the best game they've ever played. So even our least popular game, mm-hmm. I've had someone come out and say, that's the best game I've ever played. And to me, being able to be that important in someone else's life, that you are the best video game they've ever played, is awesome.
Well, let's hope that happens for the next one too.
Let
me know when it's out, and we'll make sure we shout about it and let everybody know.
I appreciate that, Chloe. Yeah, I will do.
And I will try not to download it. For those of you listening, just so you know, before Mark and I were talking about a few things before we started recording, and I was saying that Prison Architect is the type of game I have to ban myself from downloading, or nothing would happen in my life, which is high praise, really, or a backhanded compliment, one or the other.
Yeah, something like that. It's probably worth explaining for people that are scratching their head.
Prison Architect. That's a good idea, yeah.
Yeah, it's a simulation of a prison. So you start off with a completely empty plot of land and a bus full of prisoners heading your way. And you need to build a holding cell to keep the prisoners in. A holding cell has to have a toilet in it, which doesn't have to. But if you don't put a toilet in it, then things will start getting messy fairly quickly. You'll need a perimeter fence. You'll need some guards to stop the prisoners from escaping. And the game develops from there. So you're going to need to build a block of cells for that first lot to sort of move into. You're going to want a shower in there. You're going to need a canteen. you've got a canteen, you need a kitchen, need chefs. And we spent a lot of time with Prison Architect. It was in development for about 5 or 6 years, actually, just refining and deepening this model to an incredible level of depth, where every single prisoner that comes into the prison has a reason for being there. He has his own personality. So somebody that's committed a violent crime might be violent inside, or someone that's committed a violent crime might have been a one-off crime of passion, and they're perfectly fine. So there's a huge amount of depth into this. And so if you've got any interest in building your own prison and seeing what sort of a warden you'd be, whether you'd be a sort of crazy disciplinarian that locks everybody down into solitary confinement for 23 hours a day, or whether you think you'd be a more sort of Nordic open prison kind of a person, then, you know, Prison Architect gives you the ability to explore that aspect of you. So it's I don't like boasting about it too much, but it did win a BAFTA and it's got 2 million players, so it's brilliant. And if it sounds interesting to you, you won't be disappointed.
Yeah, I'm clearly on the path to owning a copy. Right, and on that note, I think it's time we went for the top tips round.
Okay.
Right. I love this section because it gives both me and our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our business to the next level. So, Mark, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Excellent. Okay, the book top tip first up then. If everybody listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off, not play Prison Architect, and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
Yeah, I've been thinking hard about this question because I've read very, very few books about business. Yeah. Because of what we were talking about before, mm-hmm. about passing on knowledge, you know, I think often I like to try and reason about it from first principles and figure out what the next step should be. Mm-hmm. And you can't do that if you're always looking at someone else's next step. Yep. But the and it's not really a book. I'm sure there are books, but the thing that has really had a biggest impact on me. And I'm a manager that believes that the team are the most important things in your business. That's what I believe, the most important asset. And the thing that has helped me most with managing and leading a team is the Myers-Briggs personality indicator that helps to explain why different character types might have problems communicating. And when you say one thing, that person sat opposite you might hear something completely different. And Myers-Briggs, there are other personality indicators, but Myers-Briggs is the one that I've sort of looked in over the years. So maybe not a book, but if you don't know anything about personality indicators and Myers-Briggs, type that into Google, and that's what I would spend a Friday afternoon doing if someone's got no idea about that. It'll blow your mind.
Excellent. You are the first person to ever recommend personality profiling, and that has been a long, long, long overdue recommendation.
There we go.
So that's definitely allowed.
Do I win a prize?
As a book top tip. I would say I'd send you one of my books, but I'm not sure you'd want one of my books.
Yeah, exactly. I think I know. Yeah.
I'll come up with something. Okay, traffic top tip. Which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
For us, there's only really one that we've found to be cost effective, and that is YouTube. Not YouTube ads, but the YouTube streamers who are now got millions of subscribers who can be paid to play games and review them effectively.
The guys who just sit there playing computer games and talking you through it. Wow.
That's it, exactly. Now, those guys can double my, well, no, they can do more than that. They can probably quadruple my sale. No, it's even more than that. They can an order of magnitude. They can increase sales per day tenfold when you get one of those to cover you. That's the sort of scale of it. Now, it's a little bit dubious in our industry, a little bit, because there are some YouTubers who have not been in the past particularly open about whether or not they've been paid to mm-hmm. talk about a game. So they build an audience of people by just playing games and reviewing them online. And then there's this switch to being paid to do it. And some of them haven't made that payment clear. And that's been a sort of breach of trust. But the ones we use always say this is a sponsored sponsored playthrough by Introversion Software, because we want everyone to be on the same page and know that we've paid for it. I don't like to pay for opinions. I just like the guys to play it, right? So just play for it. If you don't like it, tell everyone you don't like it. I don't really mind, you know.
Yeah, just, and, but please play it.
Please play it. Yeah, yeah, put it in front of that. And it's just mad. I mean, thinking back to the old days of the biggest audience that I possibly could have dreamt of in the early 2000s is probably going on something like BBC Breakfast, you know, and talking about introversion. And I would have got however many million, most of whom would not have been watching the TV at the time, you know, wouldn't have been able to click directly through to me and wouldn't have been my core audience of gamers. And what YouTube has done incredibly successfully is being able to produce similar sizes, millions of people watch these videos and they're the core audience and they're one click away. It is
phenomenal.
It is phenomenal. Yeah, absolutely. And everything else that we've done, we've never made any measurable money off of any ad spend other than YouTube.
Whew. Okay, the tool top tip then. Maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient day to day?
Yeah, probably the way of working on this. I don't believe in offices. I got an email the other day from a kid asking me for work experience. I wrote back and said, sorry, can't really help you out because we don't have an office. He said, I'm really sorry to hear that. Let me know when you're big enough and you can afford an office. And I felt, even though he was a kid, like I need to write back to him and say, no, we had one, we don't want one. I think nowadays, I think you really need to question. For us, the benefit is that we can plug talent in from around the world and frequently do. So if there's an artist in the Philippines, the prison architect artist came from the Philippines, that wasn't random. The guy that did level design for us for Scanner Sombra, our next game, is an Australian, but he was working in the States. We can plug them in just seamlessly into our workflow. And they are as much a employee of introversion as anyone else. So there's no sort of, oh, I didn't get the memo about that because we were talking about it in an office. It's all done online. No commute, so better for the environment, et cetera.
You mentioned earlier that you use Google Docs a lot to do that. Is there like one or two key tools you use for comms with your remote
team? Yeah, so Skype, Skype, despite everybody complaining about it, actually I do find it pretty reliable. So we've got several Skype chats on the go all the time. And then Google Docs, Google Calendar, Amazon Web Services, slightly different, but that runs all of our online infrastructure now. We've completely gone away from any kind of physical hosting. Trying to think of what I use on the day-to-day.
No task management tool or anything?
No. All of our project management, we're quite lightweight. So we just use a lot of Google Sheets for it. Don't really buy into project management Gantt charts and things like that. I don't think they suit software engineering very well, and I certainly don't think they suit video game design very well. I think creative businesses are very tricky.
Not very linear. Yeah.
No, very tricky to figure out how long things are going to take, you know, and it's not really a list of tasks that you go through. You know, bug tracking, it's all pros and cons, right? You know, you can use a big heavyweight bug tracking system, which we have done in the past, and you get to a point where it takes 3 minutes to log a bug, or you can use a Google Sheet, which takes 20 seconds to log a bug. Now, it might be a bit harder to get some of the information out. Like, I can't easily interrogate a system and say, how many bugs has this particular employee fixed? But we're only about 10 people. There's only about 6 programmers. So I don't need to be able to find out what, you know, drone 1719 has been up to. I mean, other stuff that we use, you know, a lot of these software as a services have grown up as we've grown up. So now MailChimp we use to handle all of our mail outs and things. Google Analytics, obviously, we use that a lot, not just for website tracking, but we pour other data into Google Analytics because it's very useful visualization. We use Desk as our customer relations platform. You know, it's nuts. We used to just have an email support at introversion. You know, that was it. And now you've got all of this, you know, you feel like a call center when you look at look through Desk. So Sendhow, obviously, you know, from an e-commerce point of view, I can't recommend Sendhow highly enough for our needs. There's a few
tools. Cool.
Yeah, no one. I don't think there's one killer app that I sort of log into every day and sigh with happiness, you know, how productive it's making me.
Okay, cool. Then the last top tip, the startup top tip. If you met someone this weekend who's thinking of starting an e-commerce business, what would be your first piece of advice for them?
Oh, I hate these questions. I hate these questions. What one piece of advice would you give? It would depend on what they are planning on doing. You know, I guess I'd be very interested to know how they were planning on driving traffic and converting it, you know, and making sure they had a good understanding of that funnel and where they thought they were going to pick up those customers from. Because nowadays, it's so easy to pour money into YouTube or Facebook. Facebook's brilliant at extracting money from people.
Isn't it?
It's so much fun, you know, and you just like, and how you measure the value of that money is, I think, a key problem that we've never really been able to solve. You know, it's very difficult for us to ascertain how much a like on our Facebook page is actually worth, you know. And in part, that's because our business is creative and all of our games are slightly different. So we're not reselling, I don't know, male grooming products or something. So we can just keep...
Not the repeat purchase, is there?
Yeah, exactly. So, and for us, a repeat purchase might occur 3 years later, you know, rather than... because that's when the next product is out. So it's a bit tricky for us. But I guess my advice would be to make sure they had a good understanding of acquisition and conversion and what their plan was. And I would look at that and say and laugh and say that's ridiculous, you know. Or
it's going to cost you twice as much, and you're going to get half the traffic.
Exactly, and you're not going to convert it. And I think the other thing is one of the reasons why I moved away from some of the old shops and things were because add to basket, you know, look at the basket. Are you sure this is what you want? Now type in your billing address. Now, would you mind logging in, you know, and registering an account with me? And there's still a lot of slightly older sites that are forcing you to jump through all these hoops. And I think that when Amazon introduced their buy now button, you know, one click button to buy was a real revolution to me, because in those days of e-commerce, you had to get like the CVC number off the credit card and you didn't want to store it and all these other things, you know, were going in the way. And Amazon just brushed all that aside and said, no, we're going to give you one click to order. And now there's a little device hanging up in my kitchen, a little barcode scanner that my wife acquired. And she tells me that if I scan any barcode in the house, it'll turn up the next day from Amazon, you know, so it's getting even easier to buy from them. And I think that's the sort of second core principle for me for e-commerce, you know, make it as easy as possible for someone to hit that buy button, you know, collect their shipping details afterwards.
So true. Now, Master Plan World, you can find those top tips and links to everything else we've been chatting about in today's episode by heading over to ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast, where you'll see a link to this show. Now, Mark, before we say goodbye, could you please let the listeners know where they can find you and your amazing games on the web and social media?
Absolutely. So we're at www.introversion.go.uk, or you can Google for Prison Architect, you'll find us. Facebook.com/IV Software. Come and check it out.
Excellent. Well, we'll make sure there's links to all of that and everything else we talked about, of which there's been plenty in today's show. They'll all be in the show notes. Masterplan World, you can find those at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast, or just go to the website, click on the podcast tab, or use that search box. Mark, thank you so much for being on the E-commerce Masterplan podcast today and sharing something of an insight into the world of selling software online. It's been brilliant.
Cheers, Chloe. It's been a lot of fun, and hopefully some of your listeners will find something that I said useful.
Oh, I have no doubt that they will.
Fingers crossed.
Wow. What a clever guy. I don't know about you, but I'm quite jealous about that business model. I have no ability to design a game or even to code one. But wow, how cool. And lots of things, I think, which, you know, despite it being a very different model, that we can all take from that, you know, about finding the right platform to be selling on, about finding those key marketing routes. You know, they're using those YouTube streamers. There are key routes that all of us can take to gain those, to get ourselves in front of the right customers and to make sure they convert. So I hope you've all got plenty from that. I would love to know what you think. So please do head over to the Facebook group. And join in the discussion. Tell me what you think of this episode. If you want more alternative versions of e-commerce, or if you want more of the normal. That's the Facebook group. You can find via ecommercemasterplan.com/Facebook, or head over to Facebook and Google. You can't Google on Facebook, and search on Facebook for E-commerce Masterplan World. Now, last year, we published my brand new book, Customer Persuasion. And right now you can get the first two chapters totally for free at customerpersuasion.co.uk. So head over there and get started on accelerating your marketing activity and your customer growth today. And if you want a full copy, of course, I have no problem with doing that. You can get more than just the two chapters, but there's details on the website of where to go and get those sales. Let me get those sales and you can come buy copies of the book. Well, make sure you come back next week to hear our next interview. And for now, have a great week and keep optimizing. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com.